Hi, Pedro. It's really nice to have you here today. Would you like to introduce yourself to our course participants by telling a bit about yourself, your work, and how your work is connected to the IUCN Red List?
Yeah, hi Kaiser, and thanks for the invitation to be here. So I'm Pedro Cardoso. I'm originally from Portugal, but I'm working now at the University of Helsinki at the Finnish Museum of Natural History, where I'm curator for arachnids, myriapods, terrestrial snails and worms. So a bunch of groups that I'm in charge of here. And I work mostly in biogeography and conservation biology, and within conservation biology, I've been working during the last 10 years or so with the whole team on how to quantify and predict the extinction risk of species. So within these questions that relate with extinction risk, I was quite much involved in the red listing process between 2014 and 2018, when I founded, created, and chaired the IUCN specialist group for arachnids. So it's called the spiders and scorpions, but in fact you are in charge of all arachnids except Acari. And during this time, mainly I was doing lots of red listing together with about 50 members of the group across the world, and we were able to red list about 400 species of spiders
globally. That's great.
globally. Yes, so we were doing several yeah we're doing that at some point we were doing lots of red listing courses and meetings just to red list to assess these few hundred species, and everything that is involved in the red listing process. So all the mapping and all the getting all the data for about the threats on the species, and so everything that relates with the red listing process, I was pretty much involved during some years that were quite fun, but at some point also exhausting. So I had to give up being the chair in 2018 because it was consuming a lot of my time, and I was a bit more interested in the scientific side of things, and I was at some point I was getting involved too much into the technical part, so just red listing species after species, and I was missing the science behind it, so the development of new ways to assess species and so on. But I am still even after leaving the not the group but after leaving the being After quitting the job of being the chair of the group, I've been dealing with parallel questions. So basically, I've been dealing with how to get best information for red listing species, or how to predict the extinction risk of species with data that's not really used in the assessments, but that can be useful as alternative data to predict the extinction risk, like for example biological traits that can be used as proxies to assess species, or to know which species should be considered for future assessment. So I'm pretty much involved in many projects that are more interesting from the scientific point of view, because I'm developing my own ways of doing things together with my lab, but less involved in the assessments themselves, which have a very strict way of doing. So yeah, during the last 10 years, I was quite but as I've been quite much involved in all these problems, and I hope to continue in the future.
It is so wonderful to have you here on our course, because you have such a vast understanding both on the practical side of red listing and also the scientific, and also on the way that red listing is like advancing its practices and data sources. And so yes, so this is wonderful. But before we get into the threat assessments, so let's speak a bit about conservation. After all, conservation of biodiversity and endangerment species and ecosystems are connected in so many ways. And conservation is actually the practical context for application of knowledge on endangerment and biodiversity loss. So when we speak about threatened species and ecosystems, these things are linked to each other. So of course, species are parts of ecosystems, and ecosystems are the overall biotic and abiotic environment in which species live. So it is often claimed that because species are nested within ecosystems, their habitats are parts of ecosystems, the best way to conserve nature is actually habitat conservation or ecosystem conservation, and not species protection. So this claim sort of assumes that species are protected on the side of ecosystems as part of this bigger whole. Do you think this is a valid claim?
In general terms, and particularly if you are talking about the groups that I'm mostly interested, so spiders, but also other arthropods, insects, and myriapods, and so on, or snails, which are not arthropods, but you know, smaller invertebrates, let's say, that are really hard to. Usually, it's really hard to quantify the population numbers or the trends. So it's quite, and they are so diverse that it's just impossible to have just a species approach, unique. So going from species to species, like many times you do with vertebrates, where you can really have projects that focus on a single species. For invertebrates, it's not that easy usually to focus on single species. So in general, that's the way we do it. We basically try to have a more holistic view about their habitat, about the ecosystem that where they live, all the relations, and so we try to have a much more an ecosystem approach. So recover their habitat as best as we can, and with this trying to cover many species simultaneously. There are exceptions. So there are a few cases that, in fact, I was involved. Where we did have a single species focus, and in those cases, for example, we use ex situ conservation in collaboration with zoos. That do, and in this case, obviously, they basically breed single species in captivity, so that we can then both have an ex situ population, because things go wrong in their habitat, and also that we can use these captive breeding programs in case we need to reintroduce the species into sites where they have disappeared since. But in general, we go for the ecosystem approach to try to recover the ecosystem for not only one but several species simultaneously that we know occur in certain places, and that will benefit from certain interventions, or maybe not just interventions, but just having their habitat protected and not try to interfere as little as possible to keep things running. So that's the approach we usually take with most organisms. We go for the ecosystem level, and don't really focus on all the species that are part of it.
This is a pretty cost efficient way of conserving biodiversity. So you if you protect the habitat, you will sort of automatically protect the species. And this is called in situ conservation. So conservation that takes place in nature on the actual habitats. And then you referred earlier to ex situ conservation, which is conservation actions targeted to populations or individuals in captivity, so in zoos or botanical gardens. So that is another way. And that was good that you raised that ex situ conservation into discussion, because there are certain cases when that is needed also. So we cannot always do the habitat conservation or the ecosystem approach, but in some cases, for example, if the populations are so small, they need to be safeguarded in captive circumstances. And also, of course, zoos and botanical gardens are used to maintain the genetic diversity of populations. And then one benefit of conserving species in their natural habitat is also keeping the interspecific interactions in place. So species are naturally occurring in their habitats, and the habitat does not include only the abiotic features, but also the other species. This species will have positive interactions with other species that are like naturally occurring in its habitat. So that is another important feature of this kind of ecosystem approach to conservation.